assist you in mitigating claims in the future? What can government do to ensure that in future there will not be a repeat on the same scale as we saw here? We saw just after the riots took place, whether it's a riot or insurrection, that's a debate on the words, but we saw after that took place that there was a total lack of communication between intelligence, between the police. We had a police commissioner and a police minister that didn't speak to each other. And all those were contributing factors that led to the government not being able to suppress this as quickly as possible. So my question is, firstly, what advice did you get from underwriters and professionals in this field that can assist us with mitigating the size of events like this? And secondly, what discussions were there between you and the government in order to mitigate or to lessen the burden that might arise out of future events that surely might still happen? Thank you very much.
Dick Lady.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, and good morning to the members and the Team Sasria, also so other members from Treasury, and the Parliament officials. A very good morning to you, and let me join my colleagues by welcoming and appreciating the presentation. And I think the presentation is still fresh from what we discussed in the previous, in the last meeting. And there were questions that we had and are still coming up. But I think most of the issues that we have raised are a bit clearer. And the subject of the matter now is a discussion on the quarterly report. And with your permission, Chair, I would like to just shift a bit from that and just come with one thing. The situation we are facing today with the floods in KZN, I know it has affected other areas, but mostly in KZN. Is there anything that you have planned? I think I'm talking about the future now, or the plan that you're having, your intervention plan. Is this within your scope? What is it that you're going to do, or you are expected to do? Will you be able to do it, or do you expect more injection from National Treasury? That's what I want to know. And going back to the subject matter, Chair, I was always worried when members of the opposition were always saying it will come again. And I was worried because I wanted to understand why do we, or do other people or other members believe that it will happen again. But now, after this presentation, it looks like from the intelligence point of view, you are informed it will happen again. And I'm asking myself again, what informs that? But they are the intelligence people, they know better. Maybe other members were fortunate enough to have access to such information, or they were able to prophesy that it will happen again. But I will talk against it, that it should not happen again, because it's not only what we could afford to do, but the impact that it has on the social welfare of the community. It's really not okay. Honorable Ryder has covered me on the issue of the SMMEs, because previously we also had a problem with the issue of the SMMEs. The SMMEs as much as they have this, they have businesses, they have they are visionary in terms of their businesses, but they need assistance. And you have also touched into tax issues. So I'm happy. I'm one person who is happy now that the president during the SONA has pronounced on the cutting of the red tape, which means it will be easier for the SMEs to claim or to access assistance. And my question is, how far do you go? Are you able to assist, to hold their hand, to assist them in terms of following the procedures for them to access the assistance that you are offering? I will take it until here, Chair. And thank you very much.
Yeah, sorry. I'm showing you that I'm here, obviously. I mean, as if I need to, and I look the same. My problem is my Wi-Fi. So, particularly, I missed a part of what you said. I got cut off, and then Nkululeko could bring me back in. So, I apologize once again for those who joined us a little bit later than the starting point. Starting time, I just can't connect. I'm having problems. My gadgets are being updated, so I'm stuck with my cell phone. You know, when you transfer data, you've got to move from the old to the new gadgets. And so, by the end, the Wi-Fi is also extremely challenging. Sorry about that. It's the first time it's been so, one of the very few times it's been so difficult. Very quickly, yes, I think you're doing very well, sir. You know, for having come in 2 weeks ago, as Dennis Ryder says, and to get a compliment from Dennis Ryder is doubly valuable or significant, because that's not always forthcoming from him. But there you are. He too says you're doing well, and congratulations. It's a very polished presentation. I like also the precise tables and so on. Sometimes it doesn't help me, at least me, I can't speak for others, to get a sense of the quality of those statistics. What do they actually mean? And of course, I've got this opportunity as other members of asking you precisely that, and I can't go into all of the questions. I do note, of course, that, as I'm sure others did in different ways, that 85%, if I got this right, of your claims are below 1 million, which implies, yet again, what a disproportionate, burden that the smaller businesses have had to bear on this unfortunate and regrettable civil unrest. I also, I think I'm covered in different ways, so I won't, but obviously, nobody, and I'm sure you agree, needs to be penalized simply because you don't have the capacity like the big wigs in business to do proposals, and you will ensure that they assist in that regard so that they don't lose out. On the issue of whether it's going to happen again or not, we don't know. But my own view, and within the ANC, I've got a slight sense of what others might have as a view. I think it's reasonable to say that the conditions are here for it to happen again. But whether it'll happen again or not is partly a matter of agency and resources and capacity and will. We can, whichever party we come from, and civil society and business as a whole, can do much to try to reduce the prospects of that. But it is really, I know not everybody, I know for a fact not everybody will get all of us here, in my view, to some or other degree, in some or other form, are co-responsible for where this country is. We can't run away from it, really. Never mind which party you're in, and you can better for the democracy allows you to, the majority party. And ultimately, yes, obviously, we will take primary responsibility for the July unrest. Now, some of the questions put to you, I think, fall outside your purview. The political question, there's something that should be asked of the minister, and obviously, we should debate these things in the committee and in the NCOP and Parliament as a whole. So you don't have to answer anything that falls outside your purview unless we can show you that it does and you might respond. And Frank Jenkins will help us, the lawyer, in that regard. I find this question very original, Dennis. War on in Ukraine there actually leads to requests to, very interesting, to Sastia for losses. Very interesting question, Dennis. I never thought of that. Not that it follows, and therefore it's interesting if I didn't think of it, but it's, somebody could, Dennis, do you think somebody could make a claim that, the export-import thing affected whatever, but I hope not. Maybe they should make the claim to Russia and nature actually. Both of them hopefully, equally, hopefully. That's my view anyway. So let's move on. Since we got where we have about the politics of it, now obviously the SASB Act goes back to the apartheid era where they spoke of rights. And obviously the legal term, presumably from the legislation, is what you have to use. But for what it's worth, there's a cluster of us who don't think that's an appropriate description. It's basically only a question to you about will it happen again. You see, riots generally, which is what the apartheid regime referred to the 1976 student uprising, yeah, which is what we say, and the semi-insurrection of 1980, particularly 1985 on, which is described as riots, the notion of mindlessness, that it's really inherent. I'm not saying those who use it always think that, and I don't think at all any of the members of this committee feel that way, but we must be careful also in the choice of words, not you so much as civil society and ourselves, but you also might want to refer to it as one of your dead. It was social or civil unrest, not because there's something inherent in people's biology or psychology. Well, when I say biology or DNA that makes them turn to violence, they do so mainly, not solely, except those are psychological issues, right? Because of the conditions of society, because those of us in power don't hear them, because of the inequalities in our society. What would be so surprising if the civil unrest breaks out again in a country?
Point of order, Jay. Such,
they are.
Jay?
What's the point of order?
Point of order. You are misleading this committee. All the reports indicate that the unrest in July 2021 was as a result of politically motivated instigators. So please don't mislead the committee. And if you could speak up, you're very unclear.
Yeah, no, I can't do better. My Wi-Fi is what it is. And that's not misleading. That's a different point of view. You, three of you provoked it by the questions you put. I was not going to raise this. But I believe that this unrest was caused by a multiplicity of reasons, as you well know. I've said it before, Fadi. You've been in every committee where I have. The gentlemen and women who are here from Sofia don't know that. But it was also politically motivated, related to the former president's detention. I've said that publicly, in meetings. It's quoted in some of the media. So there's nothing new there. But what I'm trying to say is, ultimately, I'm responding to a particular use of a word, riot, or riot. That's what I'm responding to. So you're free to disagree. But it's not misleading this committee. It's like a nonsensical suggestion. A different point of view doesn't mean misleading. So you have your view, Fani. I've allowed you to say it. Now you listen to me. Or don't. Switch it off. Come back when I'm finished. But I have every right as a member of this committee to say what I'm saying. And I'm addressing Shakespeare. And I'm saying to you, you can continue to use the word right. But it could amend your orientation to these issues, as you yourself are doing, and saying, look, we have to prepare. So that comes to the next question. Can you tell us a few lessons you've learned from the July unrest and what you would do to try to manage this should it happen again? The next point, you know, although you've done very well, as I see it, and your presentation is unusually good compared to what you normally get here, the question to you is, what about explaining a bit more about duplicate payments and claims as caused by human error and negligence? What is this really about? I'm not really clear. You might have added to it, but I might have lost it because, you know, you can't concentrate 100%, and sometimes your Wi-Fi doesn't assist you in that regard. So these are a few questions that I'm raising, but it's set against the background that, look, you're absolutely right. You get about, you said 3,000 claims, right? And suddenly it's up to 16,000 if I got your figures right. Now, in that context, this is unprecedented exponential growth of claims. And you had limited staff, you had drawing outsiders. I think you've done overall quite well. At least that's how it appears to me on the surface. But even then, please explain, if you have the time, or you can write in reply, if there isn't enough time to cover all these issues and you're not free to give us a full enough answer, you can always write to us. Look, the duplicate payments of claims, please explain a bit more. Secondly, what is this thing about cell phone allowances for employees who are not capped? Why is this surface? Is it because suddenly members of your staff were using the cell phone, you know, like, wantonly and what is the word, without any consideration of cost, but presumably they did it because of the increase in workload, or is it that you've got evidence that they were abusing it, in which case should you have waited for the July unrest to have a cell phone allowance that's kept in some form or another? Most organizations, business, and public entities do have some sort of capping. Parliament also has it for us, correctly. So then you ask about, so you say you did fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 1.472 million and irregular expenditure of 543,041. Well, maybe against the measure of what you've had to do since the July unrest, maybe it's not a big one, of an errant sort of a performance, but maybe it is. I can't say, you know. But, you know, maybe you want to respond to that. Yeah, I'll stop there for now. I think that it's 10:30, so we've got enough time up to 11:30 for you to respond. But, you know, maybe you want to be more pithy and precise in your answers, and we can have a second round then in that case. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for the kind words that were shared by the members of your committee about the presentation. I must also extend thanks to the we've got an in-house joke here where we say incoming CEO and outgoing CEO. I must give thanks to the outgoing CEO, Cedric, who has prepared me well for this presentation and sharing some information up to the time my appointment was confirmed by cabinet. And also, you know, ever since the board started the recruitment processes, I've been following this parliament in particular, looking at the presentations that Fazria was making into it and the questions that the honorable members have been asking. So since then, you know, one has been preparing himself for this role, and I would like to thank Cedric Masondo and the executive team of Fazria for assisting me and being so kind and generous to me.
Now, can I just say something? Can I intervene here, right? So, okay, obviously we have these changeovers very often. I think you're being rather modest, and it's good that you are, but just to say, we obviously, well, I do on behalf of the committee, or the majority, before somebody says I'm misreading this, because I haven't asked his opinion. Let me put this to you. The majority in this committee, I would imagine, want to also thank Mr. Masondo and the rest of the members of the system. But the fact is that, you know, I mean, even then, you're doing very well. It's a bit inspiring. Let me put this to you. I hope the potential we see here gets fulfilled. But, you know, you've done very well. You've got a good command of the issues. You're quite confident. It's great. It's wonderful to see that. We haven't mentioned before. It's nice to meet new people. I don't know what your age is, but your voice suggests you're young. So great. Great. You know, thank you. But you're not going to be like your Imbongi, eh? If you don't deliver the next time, we're going to equally tough on you. But of course, you know, people will say, yeah, Parliament's always attacking everybody. Nobody acknowledges that we also acknowledge, as Dennis said in the very beginning, the very first member, the leader of the DA, yeah, Dennis Ryder said, you know what? You're doing a great job. So there it is. I think all parties, well, at least most of the parties here, I think share that view. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Just for the record, I am 56, turning 57 years old this year, and I have been in the industry for 35 years.
Oh, so, right.
Yeah, so that's where some of it comes from. So let me start with Honorable Ryder's questions around the SMME market. As my colleague Farida said earlier on, if you look at the slide where I had the claims band, so claims below 1 million, which were done mainly by our agent insurers, of those 95% have been settled. And if you look at the next band, which is between 1 million and 10 million, we have settled at least 74% of the claims. So the next time we meet, or in 2 months' time, we can update the committee once we've done all the reconciliation of those claims. So insofar as the SMME market is concerned, I would like to believe that we have done a good job. And in what sort of assistance are we giving to the SMMEs? Let me give you an example. of there is one franchise store owner. Let's just say he owns a Pick and Pay store, and his claim is for 7 million rand. He's got access to us, you know, at Sasria, and we are quite keen to make sure that, you know, his claim is settled quickly. And you will think that someone who's got a Pick and Pay franchise or a McDonald's franchise or any of these franchises, the operational systems and the backup systems are world class. And we are trying to figure out, why is he not giving us the information that we require? Because they should know at least what stock they had, because, you know, of the systems that were in place. We can only speculate for the reasons why some of the people are not forthcoming with the information, because it should be readily available. And we can only assume that there could be two things in play. Some of them, because, you know, franchise fees are based on percentage of turnover. Some of them, you know, might have been under declaring the turnover to whoever gave them the license. The other one is that they could have been declaring they could have been also not declaring the right amounts to SARS. So that's why we are having some of these problems. Your smaller operators, we anticipate their claims, you know, shouldn't be above 4 million or so. Those we have covered and we have paid, even with the absence of of more detailed information. So that is the first question. Insofar as the second one about cash flow, I am more than confident that we have enough cash to pay all the claims and meet our capital requirements. The cash injection from Treasury is in our bank, and yes, so we are quite comfortable. We are expecting more income as well. As the CFO said earlier on, reinsurers will be paying us, and also we're going to be getting some cash from SARS. Remember, we're a VAT paying entity, so if we're going to be paying claims in the order of 36 billion, there should be some VAT back due to us from SARS. So if we look at all those cash things, we are quite comfortable that we will be okay. Now, on the issue of our operational capacity, we are really looking at the redesign of Sasria. I made the analogy about the boxer. We're going to train the boxer differently. He's going to have different kinds of muscles going forward. For example, my colleague in human capital, Tepiso, the discussion that we are having is that we'll make sure that half of our staff going forward should be able to deal with claims, even if they are in another role. So that if we have an emergency like we have now, we can call from within our staff to start dealing with claims and assist the core claims department. The other thing that helps from our operational capacity is that we've got an outsourced model where we outsource some of the activities to our agent insurers and to the brokers. So relatively, I'm quite comfortable about that going forward. Let me just say once for all, we are not involved with the floods in KwaZulu-Natal. Those will be picked up by the conventional insurance industry. We've got over 40 short-term insurers in South Africa, and most of the property damage will be covered by that. But as members would know, in that what really happened in South Africa is those who are going to feel the brunt of the flood are those who do not have access to insurance. The uninsured people in informal settlements and in the townships. This is an area that, as Sazria, we are going to look at going forward. But before we can do that, we need to make sure that we are strong to fulfill our core mandate and then thereafter spread our wings. But the flood in Natal and the subsequent looting that is occurring will be covered by the conventional insurers. Remembering that the looting is the consequence of the flooding. The proximate cause is not any of the perils that Sazria covers. So we should be okay, but I am sure the short-term insurers will try and argue with us about the situation. I'm going to try and stay away from, as the chairperson referred to, expressing any political comments. I think I would leave that to the politicians. Insofar as what Lloyds is saying, we are not saying we are not expecting this to happen. You know, Lloyds before and the South African insurance market exited civil unrest cover. This used to be covered in South Africa before 1976 by conventional insurance. And because they could no longer make a profit, they then stepped away. As the record will show, over the 40 years, then Sazria went on to make a profit, except for 2 years in its life. In fact, even the incident before this one, we had a loss ratio of just about 76%, which is a good loss ratio for any insurance business. So I would just say, looking back over the last 40 years, with this far much more worse conditions than before, Sazria was able to make a profit. We have to plan for what is likely. We are planning that we will pay some claims, but we would like to believe that they will not be as significant as the July ones, given the unique circumstances that surrounded the July unrest. So I will leave that question there, and then I will go to the Honorable Dutoit's question about how we work with the agent insurers. As I said, Sazria operates in an outsourced model. So there is a client who buys the policy. 70% of clients will speak with an insurance company through an insurance broker, and 30% will speak directly with a call center agent, or what we call the direct insurance model, companies like OutSurance and Auto in General. And then those companies then will bundle the Sazria cover with the cover that is provided there. And the agent insurer will issue the policy, collect the premiums, and and settle claims that we mandate them to do. So when we decided to outsource the claims, we looked at the capability of the agent insurer. Some we allowed them to do claims up to 1 million, and others we allowed them to do claims up to 5 million. There is an existing service level agreement with them, and that agreement says that we will pay them an outsourcing fee of 12%, so 12 to 12.5%. And so we didn't pay anything extra for them to deal with these claims because they were already in their mandate. In the good years where they didn't have to deal with Sazria claims, they made a good money out of the 12.5% we gave them. And now they had to assist us in dealing with the about 15 to 16,000 claims under 5 million. So I hope I answered that question properly. The municipalities, yes, they, in terms of the legislation, the local government act, they have to take insurance, and we do cover them. But what we recognize some years back, that This is a special and unique segment in the market. And the way we price for a municipality, for instance, is different from the way we'll price for a university or we'll price for a or a trucking business. So our pricing reflects the risk that they face. And one of the things that I have committed that I will do to the board is to try and come up with a metrics where we can measure the performance of a municipality using quantitative measures, not qualitative one. And then we can say, okay, we anticipate that this municipality is going to do well into the future. For instance, using a metrics like what percentage of their budget goes towards infrastructure investment, what percentage of their budget goes into, let's say, salaries, and does that mean that they are likely to, to meet their service level requirements? That's one of the things we're going to be looking into the future, and recognize municipalities that are doing a great job with an award, or alternatively, not use a stick, but use a carrot to encourage those that are doing well. We do have a program, field agents, the biggest insurer in South Africa, Santam, where we work with municipalities to improve their service delivery to avoid that. And the Ukraine, we are not, Sazria covers risks within the borders of the Republic, and we do not anticipate any fallout from there in any form whatsoever. There's no indication that we should expect anything coming out of that. Coming to Honorable Ockham's question about decreasing the risk, yes, other insurers have got the luxury of if they don't like a particular risk, they feel that you've been claiming too much, they can kick you out. In terms of the law, Sazria must accept each and every risk that is given to it, and for that, it gets the monopoly status, and it facilitates investment in the South African economy. So we cannot do some of those things, but the only really tool we have, or tools that we have typically from an underwriting point of view, is one, we increase the premium if we see that the risk is increasing within that particular pool. So that's what we do. And the second one is, like we have done, is to look at limiting the exposure that we have to a particular client, and it's currently sitting at 500 million. Coming to Honorable Mahlangu's comments, I think I've dealt with the fact that the flooding does not fall within our scope. As you know, we're a creature of statute, and the act that governs the creation of Sazria stipulates which perils we need to cover. But we are engaging with the board first and with the treasury to come up with solutions of risks that will face South Africa now and into the future, and how they could be covered. So for instance, things like drought and flooding, those sort of special risks, we are working with treasury and the board to see how Sazria can extend cover in those areas as we get stronger. Furthermore, we will try and come up with solutions in partnership with our field agents for our uninsured clients. In particular, one of the things we're going to be doing is to develop you know, black brokers that operate in the townships to raise awareness about Swazia and also about conventional insurance. Because to insure your house conventionally, it's not particularly expensive. So, and it should be affordable, you know, in most circumstances. But I do appreciate the fact that most South Africans are struggling and depend on grants. I will then, you know, the support that we are getting from government, I mean, look, one, I was an outsider seeing these events unfold. And as an outsider, I would say the South African government, Treasury in particularly, responded very well to the challenges that Swazria is facing. We have got a lot, we did get a lot of support also from the industry. Some executives of insurance companies where they were in similar situations like us, where they will have an event that blows their balance sheet. They came to the party and assisted us in developing strategies as to how we can recover. Some also assisted us. They made available their public relations team to help our team to deal with the media thing. So you will have seen that Sazria's media presence has increased. So we've had quite considerable support. And as I come into this role, I've got certain ideas as to how far we should be going and what sort of things we should be doing in future. We are able to meet our current and future commitments as long as they are below a certain amount. If we have an event above, as I said, 3 billion, we are going to be in trouble. Can we predict? Right now, suggest like more or less what we've been dealing with before the July incident, given that as the Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Karimi has said, you know, the conditions that led to the July and the circumstances were rather unique. I will then hand over to my colleague, Farida, to deal with the duplicate payment. I know our system has been improved to avoid a duplicate payment, and we are not taking it light. So my comment doesn't mean that we are taking, like, my comment that's going to follow doesn't mean we are taking that. If you look at the duplicate payment as a percentage of our overall claims that we are paying, it is significantly small, but it does not mean that we do not take duplicate payments seriously. The fact that we are able to identify them and report them to you shows that we are committed to be transparent and deal with them when they arise and get the money back. But Farida will go further in that regard, and then after Farida, the CFO will deal with the issues that have been raised by the Honorable Karim around the cell phone allowance and some of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I hope I have covered everyone, Chair, as I hand you over to Farida. Farida?
Thank you, Mpumi, honorable members. In terms of the duplicate payments, the question that was raised related to the previous financial year's fruitless and wasteful expenditure. What happened at that time? The systems was inadequate, so it was a very manual process. A duplicate payment could be a duplication at that stage of invoicing towards a service provider. And in such instances, we have recovered the money back, as our CFO will confirm. the subsequent, the consequence management of that actions when something like that occurs, is that we do a root cause analysis to understand what has transpired. As I've mentioned, the system was inadequate, and in December 2020, SASRIA had embarked on launching a brand new claims management system. Within the new system, which integrates with a new system that we also implemented in the same year within the finance division, there are now checks and balances in place to ensure that all payments are adequately accounted for. The only duplicate payment that we, from a claims perspective, could anticipate can happen still would be where we have an outsource agreement with an agent company, as mentioned previously, for the claims, as an example, below a million, and the claim as it reconciles to SASRIA, that there might have been a payment from SASRIA. But that is why we have a full audit process in place to ensure that those things don't happen. The ones that has occurred, as mentioned, our CFO will confirm, was for the previous financial year, and those are the ones that we've put the mitigations in place for. I would hand over then to our CFO, who can speak to the other items that was raised in this regard. Thank you.
Now, thank you very much. I will continue to speak on the question that's been raised on fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And if I recall, if I've noted correctly, yes, Honourable Member is speaking of fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 1472261 that was incurred in the previous financial year, which is the financial year of March 2020. So, yes, there was a duplicate and overpayment of claims, as my colleague has expanded on it. And this mainly was driven by, I confirm, yes, it was driven by our legacy systems, and especially when we were migrating now from the legacy systems into our new systems, we had a situation as well where we could not, where we would have missed that a payment was paid in the previous, while we were using the previous system. And then you find that due to human error and sometimes negligence, as we investigated, is that it was also paid when we migrated to the new system. I do want to explain as well that out of the 1.4 million of fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred in that financial year of 2020, 1.272 million of it was fully recovered. And this is, there was a supplier where we paid incorrectly, which makes up the significant part of this 1.472. So we paid incorrectly that supplier of an amount of 1.2 million, and then we recovered it at 1.2667 million. So those are mainly the descriptions of some of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred in 2020. And and then I do want to say, to speak about the, I think the Honourable Member also mentioned cell phone allowances. I think what had happened in that financial year was this. We have, especially our employees that are in stakeholder management, you find that the company would have taken contracts on their behalf, and then we set a limit to them that per month this is how much the allowance, the size of your allowance is. However, to match that, there ought to have been a control on the side that we instill, on the side of a service provider, where we tell the service provider to cap, automatically cap the cell phone usage at that allowable allowance to a fellow employee. So we did not do that, and hence it then led. So you find that the employee continues to use the phone in that particular month, and is not, does not access or ways to detect when they hit their limit, and this then has led to that irregular spend as far as the cell phone allowance concerned. I hope this answers and clarifies the questions raised under irregular. Thank you.
I think with that, Chair, we are done. And if there is a question that we failed.
Okay, I don't see any hands up. Sorry, yes, I don't see any hands
up.
Can I, Njadu? Yeah, Mr. Njadu. Yes, of course, my friend.
Thank you very much, Chair, and my apologies to join late as beyond my control. Chairperson, yeah, let me just thank also the presentation and the clarities on the questions. I just want to put a more emphasis on the duplicate payments. My emphasis, Chair, is just to check in terms of what are the measures that are being put in place in terms of strengthening your internal controls, because I think the duplicate payments may be on based on internal controls. So I just want to check in terms of what measures are being put in place to strengthen your internal controls. And then further question is to if monies cannot be recovered, what will be the consequences if funds cannot be recovered? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Over to you, Saskia.
Harida?
Thank you. Honorable members, for the question. The measures that's put in place, firstly, the big one was the new claims management system that was implemented. So within the system, there are various triggers that facilitates the total payment process. As an example, for a payment to go through, and it's a company, the company registration number gets vetted and verified as well. So there are various system integration points with escalations that prohibits a payment of going through. And the check and balance in that is also to check for duplicate banking account numbers. So if a banking account appears a second time on the system, it flags. So there's various operational controls, but there is also the system in itself where we've built in those controls. And it integrates with the system that is within the finance department called our ERP system. And ERP system has its own set of controls as well. Beside that, there is two levels of authority from a human perspective within the claims department, and that is the senior claims controllers, team leaders. So the payments also has to pass through those individuals. So we've put in operational people as well as system controls to ensure that we don't have duplicate payments going forward. I hope that answers the question, Honourable Member.
All right. Unless there's a follow-up there, I don't see any hands up. I'm going to draw the meeting to a close. We will meet with you again, given your increasingly important role. I think you're acutely aware, as indeed to different degrees most of us are, that the conditions we live in are, but let's put it this way, are conducive to social unrest occurring. And there's a multiplicity of reasons, as we said, and you know, you can't be held responsible for the internal divisions within the ANC or for the obscene inequalities in our society, which are highly racialized. So this is the circumstances which you're operating. What we would like, therefore, I think, or something you might want to think about and the majority of the committee might want to consider, is the next time you appear, also focus a bit more on, you know, your preparations, if you like, for the possibility, not the inevitability necessarily, but considerable possibility that some or other degree of social unrest will be part of our society for a while at least. So maybe focusing more on that. Now, obviously, there you have to get the support of Treasury and government departments, right? It's not your task alone. But what I'm trying to say is what I don't get enough of, and maybe it's just me, and maybe I'm wrong, but for what it's worth, I feel there needs to be a slightly more proactive projection of where you're going, taking into account the volatility of our social fabric and structure at the moment, so and political and economic structure at the moment. So, you know, that's all I can plead for. Obviously, another big issue for us with the Finance Committee, after all, together with our committee in the NA and the Appropriations Committees in both houses, is to actually look at what it does mean in terms of allocating resources and funds in a circumstance where, you know, the budget is over-constrained and overburdened, and the economy is just not growing. So you know, these are difficult times, but we shouldn't give up. And we, well, most of us at least, are quite confident that with the current leadership, you'll be able to do as much as is possible in the context that you alone can't do it, address all these issues that we've raised fully and adequately. Okay, thank you. Best wishes to you, and thank you, colleagues and comrades. And we shall join again at 12:30. Yes, do come in, whoever it is.
Sure. Okay, yeah. Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to say I really appreciate the time the Parliamentary Committee has taken to have us as we can present to you this morning. And we also take note of your comment of us next time giving you more scenarios of what we have looked at. So as an organization, SASRIA, on a regular basis, does an own risk solvency assessment, which is the actuaries within the business, together with the whole business and the Prudential Authority, look at the business of SASRIA and what types of risks we could face, and also what types of financial means we need to have in order to be able to be resilient as an organization, so that when things like the July unrest happen, we are able to still be financially solvent. So I think it will be a good idea at the next session that we have for us to be able to take the committee through the work that has been done before. And what the CEO and his team have shown today is just very high level. And they did show a little bit of it, but not in as much technical detail as the team could go in to explain all of that. So a lot of that work is being done internally. So I just want the committee to be left with assurance that that amount of rigor is done in the organization, so that you're not left worried that, you know, we might not be thinking about that. But thank you so much. I'll leave it at that.
Good, good. So you're doing this, and we know you're doing it, and you say you'll share it with us in the future in a fuller sense. Great, great. You know what? It's such an uplifting input from you as we draw to an end. Look, I can only speak for myself and maybe the majority, because at times my views are my own. It doesn't mean the ASP MPs necessarily agree. But you know what? It's nice to meet you, really. Because, you know, the entities that appear before us often, it's quite, let's say, an uphill thing to engage with them and to be left with a positive feeling. I'm sure it's not all feel good stuff. It's really genuine, most of it at least. And except it's not that you're deliberately misleading us. I think who knows how things will pan out. But it's great. It's great. It's really good. It's nice to meet you. You lift our spirit. And you keep well, and best wishes to you. And you're a young team overall, and that's great too. Thank you indeed. Bye then.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Chair.
Chair.
Thank you.
Lady, I can hear you, Dick. Okay.
Yeah.
You get a sir.
Bye, sir.
Bye, and thanks to management.
And thank you, Chair.